Hello everyone and welcome to the latest episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. This is episode 44 and our little group stage review from Euro 2020 or 2021, whichever one you want to pick, and kind of a look ahead to the knockout stages. As always, I'll be your host Ben Jackson and I'm once again joined by Scott and Joris. Scott and Joris, how are you guys doing? Are you enjoying the Euro so far?
I was just going to say, what a feast of football we've been having, eh?
2 out of 3 still have a home team to support, so that's not a bad tally at all.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think we've definitely had some exciting games. The England-Scotland game, not so much in terms of excitement, but every other game's been pretty good. And last night's Hungary and Germany and all those sort of games that had a massive kind of implication for us as the Belgian Football Podcast were definitely exciting. So yeah, if you have been ignoring the Euros this far and not watched any of Belgium's game, let's quickly run through their results. They opened up away to Russia and yeah, it was a pretty comfortable 3-0 win in the end. Romelu Lukaku with a brace, Thomas Meunier scored as well. Meunier having to come on because Castagna was injured. He's now out for the tournament, which is a real shame, but it sounded like the injury could have been a lot worse than it was. So thankfully, it's not as bad as that. They then went on to Denmark. Again, if you've been head in the sand, you won't have known why this game was kind of as crucial as it was. I thought it was a great occasion. I think both sets of players, I think Belgium as well, on the 10-minute kicked the ball out, kind of applause for Christian Eriksen. I thought that was fantastic of them. Again, glad he's okay. I think that's really good that he's fine and stuff. And you could kind of tell Denmark really wanted to come out and do it for him. Raced into a 1-0 lead for Yusuf Poulsen. And yeah, I thought Denmark were fantastic in the first half. Our old friend Joachim Mele was getting up and down on the wing there for Denmark and he looked really good. However, halftime, Martinez knew he needed to change some stuff, brings on Kevin De Bruyne, game just changes. He was fantastic when he came on, sets up Thorgan Hazard's goal, and then he scores the winning goal himself in the 70th minute. Belgium kind of two halves there that they kind of showcase why they are as good as they are and why Martinez knew he needed to make changes. De Bruyne's back, he's fit. It was great to see. Denier, unfortunately, in the first half wasn't so great. He came in from Boyata. Boyata, I thought, was excellent in the Russia game. They replaced him with Denier. Denier wasn't as comfortable, so to say. But yeah, so that 6 points from possible six onto Finland. And yeah, Finland needed kind of a result, really wanted a result. Again, it was a pretty decent game. However, Romelu Lukaku, again, at the centre of everything, he got another goal in 81st. Paused Lukas Hradecky got an own goal as well. And every outfield player has now played minutes thanks to that. Belgium Pro League's own Hans Van Aken came on for, what, 3 minutes? Saw a very funny heat map of him, which just showed a line coming onto the pitch and a line going off the pitch. He did a little bit more than that, but I thought that was quite funny. Joris, as you are our resident Belgian, how do you feel the group stages went? Obviously, 9 points from a possible 9, unbeaten. Are you happy with what you've seen so far? Any and kind of areas of concern?
There is nothing very new or spectacular that has shown, I suppose, against Russia. The performance on itself, I think I was still the most critical of the three of us. But well, it was 3-0 and Hazard already got some playing time. Eden Hazard already got some playing time. But yeah, the main takeaway is indeed the Castagne injury. So far, Meunier is doing a good job, but there is no backup anymore on that side. So that's... yeah, that's a potential worry, at least. What else? Denier. Actually, there's the fun stat. In the first half, he gave exactly one pass wrong of like 50, and not all of them were like riskless, but obviously it was one of the first ones, or maybe even the first one, and that was just very nonchalant. And it was not only the pass itself, it was actually two blunders in 1 second. He gave the ball away, and then he stepped out, which he should not have done. Of course, Denmark, they're also just obviously a decent team, is in 10th place in the ranking above the Dutch, even a really decent team in the Nations League. They already got a good fight against Belgium. So just to stress, like the opposition was not too bad, and you can, even if there were no special circumstances, it is a tough opponent. And yeah, I think indeed, well, De Bruyne, Lukaku gave a masterclass in the second half. Even especially Lukaku, actually, like his work on the two goals. He didn't score, but the importance there. And well, also in that game, Eden Hazard had picked it up as well. He gave the assist. It was not the most difficult one, but in the execution of the whole attack, it fit perfectly. And you know with Hazard that he can do that. The assist to De Bruyne's goal. In the Finland game, he played a full 90 minutes. So the concern is more like Hazard still, the injured ones. in the foresight of at least hopefully four tough games ahead. Is he gonna be okay or not okay enough? Because he's never gonna be at the top level. But well, he's shown some things now, which is like, how to say, put it maybe more than we expected, but less than we hoped. Something like that.
Yeah, no, that I think that definitely kind of sums up Eden's kind of tournament so far, doesn't it? You're like, oh, actually, like, there's some moments here, but then you're hoping, you're like, oh, I just love it if he just comes on and turns into like Eden Hazard of like 2-3 years ago, where he's just like ripping teams apart. Scott, as a neutral, we all kind of, and even like Joris obviously pointed out, like, before the tournament and stuff, the defense, what have you seen from it? Are you still as concerned as you were before the tournament? Are you more concerned? Like, where are you kind of on the defense at the moment?
I think the concerns haven't really gone away. Not for me anyway, they've not changed. I've really enjoyed what I've seen so far, actually. I mean, obviously, first objective achieved, win the group, which they've done. Won all three games, scoring 7 goals, conceding only one. And the one goal they did concede comes directly from a mistake. So I think there's not too much to be critical about. The first game was, you know, kind of panned out pretty much as expected, really. I mean, you know, Belgium has scored, I think, 11 goals against Russia in their three previous appearances as well. So they had a habit of scoring around 3 or 4 goals against them. So the expectation was to do the same, and they did. The Denmark game's interesting because I think the way that panned out was affected quite a lot psychologically for everybody by, you know, what had happened in the days preceding it. And that first half, which was a bit of a nightmare from Belgium's point of view, nothing really went right. Nobody really kind of got pass marks. As painful as that was to watch and as frustrating as it was, I think, having thought about it now, this is maybe not such a bad thing that first half performance was pretty dodgy. Obviously, you know, they brought the big guns out in the second half and were able to turn it around. A nice position to be in. But I think if you're going to have a bad half, which Roberto Martinez was talking about after the Denmark game, his press conference, saying, look, you know, you're allowed a bad half of football at some point, I think is a very valid point. And if you're going to have one, it's as well being in the group stages than later on. And I think maybe that might serve as some kind of a positive wake-up call to the squad about just their kind of levels. There was no issues for me about their performance levels up to that point, but it's just, you know, it's nice to have that reminder at, you know, a time like that, you know, you can't go into games at a tournament like this and expect to kind of feel your way into a game of that. You've really got to be on it all the time, you know, especially at the knockout stage. It was pleasing to see them turn a game around. I mean, that's important at any stage in a tournament, and that, I think, not many teams have done that so far. So that's a very positive sign in itself. The Finland game was a bit of a write-off in the sense that, you know, they didn't have to win it anyway. There was an expectation they were going to, and they just wore them down in the end. They played kind of pretty well, I thought, even though they never really kind of got out of their first gear, kind of particularly. Lukaku's putting away nicely. He's on 3 goals. He looks like he's really up for it, wanting more. It was really nice to see Jeremy Doku get a start and the Batman to get a little run out as well. I think they were important, as Jane, you know, everybody's had a bit of game time now, and that's, again, another huge positive. So not too many negatives in there, apart from the slightly flat performance in the first half against Denmark. The injury to Castagna is unfortunate, but I think they can cope, and they've proved that they can, and I've enjoyed what I've seen so far. So, you know, not too many complaints, lots of reasons to be optimistic, even though, here's the little caveat, they are, as we now know, in the tougher side of the draw. But, you know, if Belgium are going to go all the way, and I really hope they are, then, you know, they're going to have to do it the hard way, which, again, I think is no bad thing, because actually, you know, psychologically, being on the other side of the draw, I think could harm some of the bigger guns in there. So knowing that it's going to be really good sides that you're going to be playing every round now, I think can only be a positive thing.
Actually, the game against Denmark, the turnaround at that time, of course, now there's been a bit more, but it was the first turnaround of the tournament, yeah. So the first team that came back from behind to win a game. And I didn't touch on the Finland game, and indeed, well, it's mostly getting the win. Not that it was that important, but also giving everyone game time, so more people management than anything else. I was pleased with Vermaelen, the with his performance in Boyata again, actually. So that actually were good signs. Of course, not against the best of opponents and not of the same caliber as we're facing next.
Yeah.
I think the defence issue, just to come back to that for a second, guys, I think, you know, we spoke about it a bit before the tournament and lots of people have been talking about it during the tournament, and I've been discussing it in a bit more detail on some external pods that I've kind of been guesting on and highlighting that that's most people's kind of concern, and we're getting to the stage now where we're really going to find out where it's at, because a much better standard of opposition is going to be running at the defence. I think the most important thing for me is that the gap between the midfield and the defence doesn't become too great, you know, so that it's not exposed. And I think Axel Witsel's going to be really, really important here. I mean, he's impressed me a lot with the game time he's had so far. I know he's ahead of his rehabilitation, which is a good sign, and he's actually looking quite good. You know, it's really nice to see him on the pitch having the influence that we know he can have when he's playing and communicating as effectively as he is with both the front line and the back line. You know, really, really important. I don't feel too worried about, you know, the prospects of Portugal next, because I think there's lots of reasons for Belgium to go into this game being pretty strong favourites, actually.
Yeah, let's move on to the Portugal game. I think, so the kind of my take on it is, as an Englishman, I have been, to pardon my French, shithoused by Portugal on so many occasions at the tournament. They are the archetypal shithousing side who, like, if we remember last Euros, didn't win a game in the group stages, get to the final and win. Ronaldo gets injured, Adair scores a 40-yard screamer. Like, there's literally nothing you can do about that. It just, that is Portugal, isn't it? They've got Pepe at the back, one of the most hated men in football, who will be on the referee's case. So I think as a team, you've got Ronaldo and Pepe. They'll be on the referee's case all game. And I think for Belgium to win, they just have to be so much smarter than Portugal. And you've also got to kind of play the game the way, not the way Portugal do, but you've got to be like, okay, these guys are going to try and wind us up, because that's what they do. They wind you up. They're passionate. Yeah, you've got Ronaldo. Everyone's saying he's in fantastic form. Like, yes, but he's got 5 goals, 3 penalties, 2 tap-ins so far. Like, he's not the Ronaldo of old. Like, he's not beating players like crazy. He's just cleverer than he used to be. They've got penalties against France, which are just like crazy penalties. They were penalties in my opinion, but like the way the tournament's gone for Portugal, like against Germany, they played a team that played that 3 at the back with the wing backs. The wing backs literally tore them to pieces all game. Gerson's on that left-hand side against Semedo. Like, poor Semedo was just getting absolutely destroyed.
Ronaldo's goal there, albeit a tap-in, it is quite impressive, because he heads the ball away and then he sprints it and he finishes it off. It's still crazy, though. But yeah, of course, it's not a technical skill action or anything.
I'm not calling him like a tap-in merchant. I'm just saying that he's a different, it's a different Ronaldo to what you're used to, isn't it? In terms of the way he scores his goals are just a little bit different. So I'm kind of with you, Scott. If I took this as just like a game on paper, like, obviously it's not played on paper, but I've looked at both 11s. So I'm like, I think Belgium have better players in better positions to make a difference. I think they can exploit Portugal's weaknesses, but it's Portugal. They just know how to win knockout games of football. Like, if they get into this game and they think, okay, we are much weaker here, they'll play for the penalties because they know that they can win on penalties. Like, I've seen them do it so many different times. It's just like, they're such an infuriating side and they know how to get it done.
I think you kind of highlight something really important there, Ben, and that is actually when you look at Portuguese football culture, actually, and even at a club level as well, that aspect of gamesmanship, I suppose, that's the word a lot of people would use, is actually quite big in Portuguese football and culture. And there's something about the way that these two sides are going to set up where you've got a pacey attacking line in Portugal. You've got Silva and Jota there, who are exactly the sorts of players in terms of a profile who when we were talking pre-tournament about, you know, look, there's a type of player here that really is going to enjoy running against this Belgian defence, and both of those players fit that, as does Bruno Fernandes and Ronaldo. So if the game isn't quite working out the way Portugal's way, then I think it's almost inevitable that we're going to see these players running at those defenders and looking for fouls that aren't fouls, and, you know, playing for free kicks, which we know are so important. You know, set plays are, you know, just massively important, both at national and club level now. So that is a way that I think Portugal might approach this game. The other advantage they have, I think, is they're much more familiar with playing in warmer temperatures. And because this game is going to be played in Seville, albeit later on in the evening, it's still going to be pretty bloody warm. So that's a minor advantage, I think, that they will have in terms of how this game might pan out. So I think Belgium just have to be smart, I think, and play their own game. And I think it's quite important Belgium score first, because in the heat like that, you don't want to go chasing a game and pressing a game against a side that will more than happily tear you apart on the break as well. So I think it's really important that Belgium kind of get their noses in front at some stage in this game, you know, just to kind of win it tactically as well.
Just to kind of jump on quickly on Scott's point about Sevilla as well as a location, like, it's probably going to be an away game atmosphere in that sense. Like, you're not far from the border with Portugal there. You'll have fans coming across. And yeah, kind of like you said about the gamesmanship and stuff. I don't know if you guys saw it last night, but Bruno Fernandes, I can't remember who he took out from behind, like crunched him down the back of the ankle and then ran over and told him to get up and not dive. And I was like, watching the replay, I was like, are you mad? You literally took him out. You know you've taken him out. But it's that sort of attitude, like, win at all costs, do whatever you can to win. But I think Belgium needs to be aware of. I think Martinez needs to take that Germany game against them and be like, right, this is the blueprint. This is how we can beat them. Yeah. I think we've got a question we'll talk about later, but like, I think Kevin De Bruyne will feast on those kind of like inside balls between Pepe and Semedo. That ball is on, it's been on every game that Portugal have played. Mbappe was running through there the other day. Germany were doing it every single time, just in between those two. For some reason, there's always so much space. The way Belgium play, I think they can exploit that.
That's definitely the case as well. But what I wanted to point out is, like, I'm a bit afraid so far from what I've seen so far, to come really back to the beginning more, like, that teams that really pressure high, like Denmark in the first half, they can really put Belgium under pressure and keep them under pressure. And I hope they learned from this game as well. Because, like, teams, I'm not sure if Portugal actually will do that too much. So that might be an advantage that indeed this side, I think I put it in the document that we prepared for this episode as well, like in the notes, Germany really played like Belgium play and they ripped them apart. And I hope that's going to be the case. But yeah, they have made a few changes in the midfield now. So like, we'll see how that pans out. And yeah, that left-hand side, that's also why I'm especially wary about Eden Hazard's form. Because if he's in form, then they have two things to really look out for. Like his own individual dribbles and the passes in behind and so on. So but luckily also, even if Eden Hazard is not there, like Carrasco can probably also do quite some things there. He's also a good runner in these spaces, so that might be perfect fit. Or Doku, of course, with his speed. But I think he will not start, but if at some point it will be needed, I think he could be a real good joker there.
And on the Carrasco point as well, like, this man plays in Spain, he knows how to play in warm temperatures and stuff like that. Like, he's used to play, he's played the stadium and stuff like that. I feel like he could be a really big play in this in terms of his pace, because he is lightning quick. So like you said, you could start Eden Hazard first, because that just gives Semedo something to think about all game, and like Pepe, and like he can kind of exploit that. And then if you bring Carrasco on like later on, just to really exploit in terms of pace, like, there's so many options. I think what we've kind of agreed, isn't it, that like going forward we think Belgium will be fine. We're just so nervous about the defense and how that's going to hold up, and this is its first kind of like test against a real quality attack. No offense to Denmark, like, Yusuf Poulsen's not Cristiano Ronaldo. He's not a prolific goal scorer in any sense of the word. Ronaldo is, he'll take his chances if you give them to him. He's just so much cleverer than some of the strikers they've played up against to begin with.
I think it's really important that Belgium start the game strongly, because what you don't want is, you absolutely do not want Portugal coming out hard and fast at the beginning, and they do that a lot. That's something they're very good at doing, and you just don't want that, because it's going to put the Belgian defence in the back foot straight away, and it becomes very difficult to feel your way into a game after that point. You know what I mean? Once you get a side sitting deep and get them ragged early, then, you know, it's really difficult to settle after that. So I think that's another hugely important thing, and I think they have to start the game the best better of the two as well. I mean, you've got to remember, this Portugal side have already conceded 6 goals. They've scored 7 but conceded 6 in the group stages. So their defence arguably is dodgier than the Red Devils one. plenty of reasons to be optimistic. That's
an optimistic take indeed, given the opponents they had. But of course, indeed, they did concede them.
They did play the mighty Hungary and that team, Germany, I can't remember, maybe, yeah. The German side. Germany's best game was against Portugal, to be fair, so I'm hoping that they've wasted that. And then, yeah, obviously the French, which was an entertaining game until you could kind of tell they both realised that a draw was fine and they could just kind of sit on that. Let's get ahead of ourselves a little bit before we go. If Belgium can beat Portugal, which we are obviously really hoping they can, they're off to Munich for the next round, which will be against Italy or Austria. We presume this is going to be Italy, don't we? And, like, I feel like that is basically like a step up from Portugal, the way the Italians have been playing. Like, Mancini's got them playing the best, some of the best football most people have ever really seen from an Italian side, so that's going to be tough. And then potentially after that in a semi-final, you've probably got France in London. So yeah, this is definitely the tougher side of the draw, that's for sure, but it's going to be entertaining, and I'm glad that you're in it and we're not in it as an Englishman, because we'd been out instantly, and didn't want to face Portugal at all. But one of the teams I'm looking out for has to face them.
All these things Ben just said, forget them, because games have to be played, yeah. And there will be a surprise here or there anyway.
Exactly.
So, yeah, just hope that it's not us getting up, being kicked out, Belgium being kicked out.
Yeah, I think that's what we find with the Euros, isn't it? Like, it is just super competitive in that sense. Like, you get through to this knockout stages and all the teams kind of deserve to be there on their own merit. And it is funny, yesterday people being like, oh, I don't want to get them, don't want to get them. It's like, you get who you get. One of the English pundits said, you can't plan for it, you just get who you're going to get and you just got to play them and hope that you can win.
Well, the thing is with the format that you actually, some of the teams can plan. That's the annoying part. But okay, let's not get too much into that.
We could be here for a long time if we start ranting about the format. Let's quickly jump to a list of questions. We've just got one this week from our good friend Dieter, Dieter van Gucht. Dieter asks, who should be in the middle of the defence in the knockout stages, and should De Bruyne play in midfield in the knockout stages? Then is Courtois the best keeper so far at the Euros? Scott, as I asked you about the defence, I'll give you the defending one. Joris, I'll give you the De Bruyne one, and I'll take the Courtois one. So Scott, who should be in the middle of Belgium's defence in the knockout stages?
Personally, I would pick Boyata, but I think Martinez is going to stick with Denier. He's got a slight preference there, which is fair enough. And if anyone saw the press conference a few days ago after the Denmark game, you know, Denier, fair play to him, came out and, you know, answered a lot of questions there with great dignity and handled the press very well and said, look, you know, I hold my hands up, didn't have a great game, you know, a lot of what we did wrong kind of stemmed from me and I'm going to sort it. And actually had quite a good game against Finland for the most part. So personally, I would start Boyata, but I think he'll go with Denier.
Yeah, to jump quickly on that question as well, like, I hope Boyata or Vermaelen. I hope, really actually hope Vermaelen is in one spot, but it might be that I like, I'm not completely, I think Boyata in the middle and Vermaelen on Vertonghen's place, to be honest. That would be my setup.
Yeah, as much as Denier got a lot of kind of flack for that Denmark game, I didn't think Vertonghen was that much better. It was just Denier made that one mistake that kind of led to the goal.
I think the trouble is there's no real alternatives, yeah. Actually. It's much of a muchness, as you would say, really. You know, it's toss of a coin stuff, really. And I haven't had a look at the data. I might go away and do that a little bit later, just out of curiosity. But yeah, there's not really any alternatives. So whoever plays is just going to have a good game. But,
yeah. That should be Martinez's team talk for sure.
The reasoning for Vermaelen for me is like, he never really disappointed despite everything. Of course, he's been like the man of glass for several years now, but whenever he was fielded, he did well. And also this time that was the case. But yeah, okay. I think I'll then go to what Ben actually is assigned to me. It is a tough one. Like usually De Bruyne would be in like the right pocket if everyone is fit, and Tielemans would be in the midfield, the partner with Sel. And I think that's an option. That's a good option. But Tielemans is not having the most convincing tournament so far, and he realizes that himself. But like, if he is at the level that he was in the first games, it might be tough, and maybe it might be good to put De Bruyne there, and then yeah, any winger in that right pocket, and maybe more as a winger even in this case. Of course, if De Bruyne plays, he's not really a winger. He does go in and out sometimes, but not like running past defenders along the line and then give the cross. But Meunier can do that. I think, yeah, De Bruyne should be in the right pocket in the end. I think so. And then Tielemans, Witzel in the midfield.
I agree. Just looking at, because Portugal play that back four, I just feel like if you have De Bruyne in that, like you said, the right pocket, Rafael Guerreiro has to kind of come across, and like it causes such more of a problem for him and Diaz at the back, which then allows Meunier to push on down that right hand side and kind of get some crosses into Lukaku. So I agree. I can see it both sides, because part of me would like him to be in that midfield, just because then he can play that ball in between Pepe and Semedo from deeper, which we saw like Pogba did it a couple of times, and for the German, I can't remember who was doing it for Germany. Toni Kroos, probably, that had been his kind of role in that. So maybe Witzel has to take that on, and Tielemans, maybe he can do that. But De Bruyne is kind of like the guy you want to be doing that, because we know that he is just a fantastic passer of the football.
The thing is, of course, Tielemans indeed is probably the second best. not that's overstatement, of course, but like he is also really good at that. And if you have both of them on the pitch, of course, you have two focal points for these things. And of course, De Bruyne, he's not going to be stuck really on that right wing, of course. Yeah. So he will be running here and there, all from midfield on, and maybe even lower if needed.
I think what you said, Joris, will happen. I think Martinez will put him there, but he can change it up whenever he wants. That's the luxury he has with this team. Is Courtois the best goalkeeper so far at the Euros? It's really hard to say. to be honest, because I don't think he's been massively tested. Against Denmark, there wasn't that much he could do about the goal, if I remember rightly, and it was so early on anyway. He's definitely one of the best, I think it'd be safe to say, guys, isn't it? I think just judging by his club form and everything this year, he has been one of the best keepers. I thought Rui Patricio has played quite well for Portugal.
Yeah, you mentioned Patricio there. I think he's had a pretty decent tournament, actually. He definitely has, and I think both of those keepers are better than Dubravka, who had an interesting game, shall we say, yesterday, guys. Oh,
imagine, he saves the penalty and then does that. He clearly just couldn't be bothered anymore. I think Danny Ward at Wales, he's had a very good tournament so far. Jordan Pickford of England, he hasn't conceded a goal yet, yep, and he's made some good saves. I still can't believe Stekelenburg's playing in goal for Netherlands. Like, surely that's going to be exploited at some point.
Well, it actually has, but they got lucky that it was always like narrowly offside. But
yeah,
but yeah, and against the goals, like they only conceded against Ukraine, and then there he couldn't really do anything.
Czech Republic goalkeeper Vaka, because he was good against Scotland, played a good game there. But yeah, I think Courtois has to be up there, and I think he's going to have to prove it in this game. And I think this is for him kind of his big chance, isn't it? To if he can keep Portugal out with the attacking players that they have, I think that will go a long way to cementing his place at the top of the pile.
His distribution is very good, actually. Mm-hmm. That's one point I would make about Courtois, always has been, his distribution is absolutely excellent, and that's one of the things I think that makes him the number one pick, not just who he plays for at a club level. That I think it's his ability to play out. He is the best in modern goalkeeping terms that I think the Red Devils have in their squad, definitely.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I think it's so important for the way Belgium play as well. So I think that pretty much wraps up this short episode, and it was a short episode, guys. We actually finally had a short episode when we said it was going to be a short episode. So kind of to give listeners a little bit of an idea, our plan at the moment is, obviously it's dependent on if Belgium get through. Once they get through this game, if they win, we'll do like a kind of similar episode. We'll just break down the game and then look ahead to the next game, and who knows, we could do that all the way to the final, which would be exciting. If not, they go out and then we start putting into place our kind of bumper preview for the Pro League season, because that is coming around quite quickly. Some teams have released their kits, some teams haven't released their kits, much to the annoyance of one member of this podcast. But eventually Genk will give us their new kit. Who knows when it's going to turn up.
Scott, be patient.
It's only a month away, folks. 4 weeks, and the Pro League's back.
Exactly. We've been starting to put in some work. We've got some exciting stuff lined up already, and I'm sure we're going to have some more exciting stuff as the season goes on, for sure. But yeah, as always, Scott and Joris, thank you very much for joining me.
Pleasure, as always.
Pleasure, and I hope to have a few more episodes in the coming weeks.
Absolutely, absolutely. Especially for me, if England go out, I can just focus on cheering for Belgium and hope that they win.
You can get frustrated twice.
Oh, yeah. Won't think about it. Yeah. So, as I say, special thanks to Joseph McDade for our intro and outro music. Shout out to freelance football ops as well. By now, you should know what those guys do. They find you jobs covering basically everything in football media, writing, design, video, audio, and just anything else. Search for them on Google, search for them on Twitter, and you can find out all the information there. Yeah, as I said, we'll be back with another episode shortly. It'll either be a review of the game, looking ahead to the next game, or just a review of the game and kind of what went wrong. And then, yeah, we're full steam ahead for the Pro League season, which we are very excited for. So if you have any questions about the upcoming season that you'd like us to answer in that preview podcast, just give us a shout out. Yeah, as always, you can find us on Twitter at Belgium Podcast. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. We also have a Gmail account, which is belgiumfootpodcast@gmail.com. Alternatively, you can find us individually as well. I'm at benjack94, Scott's at scott_coin, and Joris is at Joris_bet. Once again, thanks for listening to this episode, and we'll see you very soon on another episode of the Belgium Football Podcast.